Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, March the 5th, 2010. USDA will produce an extraordinary report Wednesday next week with updates of the crop production figures for the 2009 crop. Will it hold any surprises? We'll ask our panelists their forecast today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today are Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois, Matt Bennett, Total Grain Marketing out of Windsor, Illinois, and Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises in Cedar Falls, Iowa.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Here the way the numbers settled up. In Chicago, and on a Friday afternoon, remember, we give you week-to-week trade. In the wheat pit, the nearby March had a weekly high of 513, a low at 482 and a quarter, with a settlement price down 24 and a quarter cents at $4.82 and a quarter. July wheat at 505 and three quarters for the soft red, off 25 and a half cents. March corn futures at 381 top, bottom at 364 and a quarter. Settlement price there at $3.64 and three quarters, down 13 and a quarter. And the December contract, 402 and a half, 10 and a half cents lower. March soybean futures, 962 and a half, the high, the low at 28. Settlement price at 934 and three quarters, down 16 and a quarter. And the Novis at 925 were down 16 cents. April live cattle today, 92.95, up $1.25 on the week. And the March feeders at 101.25, up 115. And the lean hog settled $73.10. They finished 30 cents higher on the week. Let's open today's discussion with this question. Which of the spring-planted crops would you advise your I-State clients in Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa to lean more heavily towards given a normal start to the growing season and the freedom not having applied fertilizer last fall affords them? Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing.
Very good question. I think we've all been dealing with that. When you say given a normal start, that definitely makes this question a little bit easier. Hey, you know what, if we don't get a lot of precipitation in the next 2 to 3 weeks, if the weather does warm up just a little bit to where we can dry the ground out a little bit, you know, we can be able to get some fertilizer spread, be able to plant a little more corn acres. That's what I would be going with if I was a producer. I think that, you know, most people feel the need to get out there and work the ground, you know, fairly extensively, especially where there was ruts. And I think there's ruts in a good deal of the Illinois, Indiana, Iowa area. So most of the guys are going to have to work it anyway. So there's really not that option of saying, I'm not even going to work it at all and no-till beans. I think a guy's going to have to at least work the ground a little bit. So my inclination, if the weather cooperates, especially given, you know, we have the insurance price set at $3.99 now, and we're only a nickel under last year with a lot less invested in our inputs than what we had last year. You know, I have a hard time advising a guy not to plant corn if all these things are, you know, the way that we're talking.
How not surprising from the farmer that he wants to plant corn. That doesn't surprise, I suppose, most folks who are farmers. Jackie Vakes, from your point of view.
Well, you might be surprised to know, but my point of view pretty much follows right on the same course, and especially when you look at the fact that We can go out and lock in whatever bushels we don't have covered on insurance right now at very close to the insurance levels. The basis has really been pretty good on new crop corn and in a lot of places in the Three I's.
Let's take up next Wednesday's report at this point. When USDA comes out with those numbers on Wednesday morning, what is it that you will be looking for to begin with? Where will the major changes, if any, take place be? They'll be bringing out crop production figures, so we'll know maybe a new set of yields. We might have a brand new set. Well, actually, we will have a new set. They might not change, but we'll have a new set of yields. We'll have a new set of total production figures, and carryouts will change too.
First place I'm going to go to is carryouts. Carryouts still is the down and dirty most important part of it. We can increase crop size. We can increase by increasing yields or doing any of those things. But what it really comes down to is what the carryout is.
All right. So let's start with those. The average trade guess with soybeans, and we'll go there first, is 195. Of course, that's down, 15 million from what USDA had pegged it at the last time around at 210 million. Did it surprise you that the trade guess ahead of this report is lower?
Not at all. Primarily, when you look at the fact that I think among almost all analysts you talk to, we've felt that the carryout number was significantly lower than where they were pegging it. We still see decent exports, and the front end loading on exports hasn't totally stopped. So it's not a big surprise to me at all.
And is that where you're looking for changes to?
Yeah, I'd agree. I feel like most people are expecting the bean carryout number to be bullish, and I would agree with Jackie. You know, we were heavily front-loaded, and I've pointed this out this winter a few times, but like Jackie said, it's really nice to see that we didn't just completely go to zero on exports or even a negative number and some cancellations. That's the one thing I was really worried about, so... You know, I could definitely see where we would drop the carryout there. I think the production figure on corn is going to be really interesting. You know, when they say we're not going to look at North Dakota and South Dakota because we don't have the figures yet, well, to me, that says a lot. Where do you place, what do you think that those are going to be if you don't even have the comfort level to go out there and get those numbers? So, I don't know. It'll be really interesting. I think the bottom line, like Jackie said, is carry out because, hey, if we drop production, 100 million, and then we go ahead and we increase something else, 100 million or decrease, you just never know. I mean, a lot of people are saying exports aren't going to hold together. So it'll be really interesting to see what the government gives us as a kind of a staple to go forward.
I want to stay with the bean number for just a bit. At 195, of course, that's not a horribly small number for carryout for beans. We've carried 115, 130, a lot smaller number before. But you're telling me you want them to plant corn, and we're going to lose another 15 million, if this number is right, in the bean carryout. How do you balance those two out?
It's interesting, and take me just a second to explain my point of view here. You know, when you asked the original question, we said if we had a good spring. And so my inclination all along has been, hey, let's make this market, make it lucrative enough for us to plant corn. I don't think the corn market's going to completely go away until we verify that we are going to have good corn plantings. I don't have a problem with a guy saying, I just want to go ahead and plant beans. If you can still sell fall beans at $9 and that's what you want to do, I don't have any problem with that because you're locking in a profit. Now, I see a chance for a bigger profit if all things happen the way that we're saying they will, that we'll have a nice spring. Seeing this crop come online in South America, I guess I'm a little bit hesitant, especially if I'm dealing with someone that doesn't want to sell a whole lot ahead of time, of having them plant beans, because I'm not so sure, if I have as much confidence in bean prices holding together over the next 6 to 8 months as I do corn prices.
Well, one of the comments that you made is we've taken it down to, 115, 119. We have to keep in mind that doesn't happen till the end of till very close to harvest time. So it's not at all uncommon for us to be a great deal higher at this time of the year than it is. And, when you look at, there are people who have gone out and either done puts or sold futures in beans, because of the fact that they do want to plant, especially in light of corn on corn. That's a big question. Corn on corn yields were certainly not good this year. They weren't good last year. I'm hearing from more and more guys that they're really thinking about backing off of the corn on corn acres. Another wild card that we really won't know until we get to projected acres perhaps, and not even then.
All right. So you're both suggesting more corn four guys. That doesn't mean they're necessarily going to do it, but that you're suggesting that they do more corn acres. If they make that decision, and I, you know, this is kind of funny because the guys really like to listen to John Bondurant out of Memphis, Tennessee. He'll be at the All Day Ag Outlook meeting on Tuesday and talk about what his decisions for the coming crop year are. But this is the first year that I can remember where everybody that's out there that's a farmer can be John Bondurant. And in the last 2 weeks before they plant, decide to shift acres around. So they're on. They love to listen to him because he makes these big grand decisions at the last 2 weeks, and they've got to do that this time around. They really have to think about what they're up to.
I think it's very important to note. You know, we can talk about weather cooperating and whatnot, but it's very important for all of us to remember that as a farmer, the ground is not in good shape. We didn't leave it in good shape from last fall. And, you know, it's going to make it very complicated for guys to make that decision. If the weather is perfect, then not only do we have to ask for the weather to be perfect going into the time whenever we work the ground, but we need the weather to be really good afterwards. So the ground, you know, if we work it deep, that the ground doesn't just get hard as a rock. I mean, there's a lot of things that are going to have to go into place. And for a guy to go ahead and make that decision to plant corn, he's going to have to be dependent a little bit on Mother Nature. He's still rolling the dice, even if he decides to go ahead and plant corn. But I do think that if I had the chance to plant more corn acres, I certainly would be very, very much interested in doing so.
How soon would both of you pull the trigger on marketing the extra acres of corn that you would plant, just the extra set? If you went ahead and planted those, when would you pull the trigger on marketing that?
Well, right. I've already been pulling the trigger from the standpoint of just talking to guys about the excess acres that they don't have covered by insurance at their APH. Okay. And for a lot of them, what we've just done is come in and did some put strategies, because we'd like to get through the acreage report at the end of the month before we really jump in and decide that we want to necessarily do cash. But, you know, if they had a good basis, cash was a good choice. But I think right now you have to be very careful. You know, we're heading up to this report in very much the same stance that we headed up to the January report. When you look at the average guesses, they're looking for a lower crop production number, you know, all of those things on the corn side of things. I think you have to be careful. And I'm sure Matt will agree. You hear it all the time. Well, there's going to be a rally. But the question is, a rally from where? From here higher or from 350 higher? Where's it going to be?
Is that what you hear, Matt?
Well, I certainly. One thing I've been saying all year long, I've been a little more bearish beans than what Jackie's been. We've talked several times together, and I've said all winter, you know what? Corn could stay status quo, and that would be a victory, in my opinion, if beans do fall a bunch. You know, and so, you know, looking at this report, I agree with Jackie, because the corn numbers could, or the bean numbers especially, because they're expecting a pretty bullish report. If they stayed a little closer to what we were last month, that would be extremely negative, because we're all expecting something bullish. So we're a lot like we were in January. It's a little bit scary.
Let's take up crop insurance very quickly. You touched on that issue. Have farmers been asking you about crop insurance decisions, and what advice do you have? You gave some already, mm-hmm. but what kind of advice do you have for them?
Well, what I've been telling everyone is you have to look at what percentage you're covering, and of course recognize that that's at an APH level. So you've got to worry about marketing excess bushels at that percentage, and then look at the difference between what your actual production is and your APH, because those are added bushels that are at risk. And so, you know, it's not too many times we hear the comment, I've got insurance, I'm not concerned. But, you know, we have to be very careful, and I think we learned that from a standpoint of covering input costs and making sure that you've got dollars for that. So I think you have to be proactive in thinking about all the bushels that you have at risk.
Yeah, so there's a yield drag of sorts with the APH. And Gary Schnitke told us Friday afternoon when he talked to us about crop insurance on the closing mark report that's probably about 10 bushels over the last 10 years or so. Is that something along the lines where you see that?
Yeah. When we're talking about crop insurance, one thing I just want to point out real quickly is that, you know, the volatility factor is much lower this year than what it was last year. Therefore, crop insurance prices per acre are going to be cheaper than what they were. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in my opinion, a guy may want to go ahead and push that just a little bit more. If he's 80% normally, he can do 85% cheaper than what he did 85% over 80 last year. He can do 85 this year, cheaper than 80 last year. And so I think I'll be pushing crop insurance pretty heavily. And I think that, you know, to answer the previous question that I might have dodged a little bit on the on when I want to sell, I want to look at a guy and say, you know what, on your excess bushels, can you be profitable? And I know you can be profitable at these levels, so I don't have a problem with him making some incremental sales. Yeah, I like doing put options and maybe selling a high call and buying a put, but you know, a lot of my guys won't do things like that. And so, you know, I don't have any problem with telling a guy, go ahead and make an incremental sale, maybe 10, 15, 20%.
In a few moments, we'll talk with Glenn Ring. He's at Glenn Ring Enterprises out of Cedar Falls, Iowa. As a reminder, our All Day Ag Outlook meeting is Tuesday of next week. That's March the 9th, and, well, we sold her out. 391 prepaid for that event. Thanks to all those who did prepay. And I have to apologize to the rest of you folks because we just can't put any more in the building. It has a bit higher fire rating code, but not with that many tables in it. So thanks much. We look forward to seeing you at the Beef House. Things start fairly early. You can find all the information at willag.org. Glenn Ring will be here in 2 minutes.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. A climbing March sun and moderating temperatures helped diminish the snow cover across Illinois this week. By the end of the week, there were only patches of snow here and there in central Illinois. A few inches of snow were still on the ground in northeastern Illinois, but it was quickly shrinking. Despite the warm-up at the end of the week, temperatures remained well below normal across a significant portion of Illinois the first week of March. Temperatures ranged from near normal in northern Illinois to 6 degrees below normal in the far south. At this time in March, we can expect normal highs around 40 degrees in the north, the mid-40s in central Illinois, and near 50 in far southern Illinois. A sprawling ridge of high pressure over the central U.S. brought sunshine to much of Illinois this week, although it was late Wednesday before clouds in eastern Illinois cleared out. A large storm over the western Atlantic had kept clouds over the eastern half of the country for much of the week. This was a dry week across the state, with only some light snow flurries across northern and eastern Illinois early in the week. A few scattered showers may dot northern Illinois this weekend, and some rain may be possible in southern Illinois on Tuesday. Temperatures should be generally near normal this week, with colder weather along with some precipitation possible by Friday or Saturday. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on Friday, March the 5th, 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today, Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing out of Windsor, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes with Stuart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois. Our guest is Glenn Ring. He's at Glenn Ring Enterprises in Cedar Falls, Iowa. Thank you for joining us, Glenn.
Hello, Todd. Good to be back.
And we're looking forward to having you at the Beef House on Tuesday.
I'm looking forward to it as well.
It will be fun. What do you think you'll be telling the producers on that day?
Well, I'll be telling them to keep an eye on the U.S. dollar. Whatever it does, it'll give us a good indication as to what we're likely to see in our ag markets, and particularly the corn and bean markets.
And do you have a prediction what it will do?
I don't do predictions, but I do have a trend. I do have probabilities, and my patterns show that the dollar has started into a macro-degree bull market, could last for years, and that's going to be deflationary if it does, and that ties in with a major cycle low I have due this fall in corn. Cycle low I do have due in the Commodity Research Bureau Index, which beans tend to follow as well, so I'm going to basically be a bearer of I don't know if it's bad news, but not so optimistic in terms of price.
Well, what do you think a cycle low in both corn and beans might look like? Is it down at the bottom ends where we have touched in recent months or further?
Oh, much lower. Much lower. The risk, you're going to hear this number from the past, 498, 508 beans, is a risk this calendar year. I'm looking 650, 750, but it is a risk. So, and I'd be surprised if we don't see 248 to 252 corn this year in December futures.
Glenn, I guess with that being said, we're talking just a little bit about guys making crop insurance decisions, you know, and, you know, maybe marketing some of their surplus corn stuff that they can't get insured because of the way the percentage levels work out. And, you know, I guess I look at the fact that a guy is pretty profitable at these levels right now, given his input costs. And I guess you'd probably concur that a guy needs to be making some sales here.
Indeed. When I listen to that question being asked, my answer would be as much as they're willing to sell as much ahead as they're willing to manage.
So with that being said, if you've got guys that are willing to do a little more creative work with put options and so on, do you have any strategies that you would recommend to a producer that, you know, just wants to lock in some of his bottom line without committing too many of his physical commodity?
If you want to do that, I would still go with, I'd actually go with add or in the money put options on December corn, November beans. Yes, they're a bit pricey, but that does give them an upside. Other than that, you can try to look for some option spreads, but for the most part, I let my producers do their own strategies. I give them the direction, I give them the outlook, and you know, we've used all sorts of things. I do like, by the way, this year, if you've got, with this kind of an outlook in these cycles, I do like the where they're being offered as hedge to arrives, because even though the basis may widen as a percentage if we're in a bear phase, the absolute number is likely to get smaller if we have severe declines. In other words, we may have, say, a 40-cent basis right now on corn here in some places in Iowa, and if we fall towards that 250 level on the board, we may very well be looking at a 25 or a 30-cent basis. Still be bigger percentage-wise, but be narrower in absolute numbers.
Hey, Glenn, you know, is your entire perspective based just on what the American dollar is doing? What about the fact that the Brazilian real has been gaining against the U.S. dollar? And what happens? What's the normal relationship between the changes in, let's say, the Japanese yen and, of course, the Chinese yuan we know is not going to be changing when the dollar begins to strengthen? How often do we see them strengthen along with it?
Well, the kind of macro degree or secular upturn in the dollar is likely to start pressuring all currencies eventually. So it does get to be a bit of a stimulative effect or inflationary effect in other areas eventually. In terms of which markets, it's easier to tell you which ones are likely to relate tightly to the dollar and tell you which ones are less reliable. And the ones that are the most tight to the dollar are going to be the euro, European currency unit, and the Swiss franc. The others are really actually not very reliable, but eventually they should all come under pressure. I do separately have a major bear market set up in the Japanese yen, which it has yet to confirm, by the way, but I have it set up, so for what that's worth. But as far as the other areas, I'll put it to you this way. I use the attitude for my analysis, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And the pattern I've been using has been treating me well for about 20 years, so I think I'm going to stick with it. And I'm not going to dwell on making it too tough. In other words, I'm not going to start splitting hairs over South American currencies and things like that in terms of what's likely to happen to U.S. prices. In terms of dollar-denominated, if we get out above 81.5 in the cash dollar index, especially on a weekly close, pressure is going to build. That could take 3 months to occur. That could occur next week. But whenever it does, pressure is likely to build.
And once that pressure builds, what happens?
Well, in a cycle year, when corn has a 5.5-year cycle low due like it does this year, the typical behavior for the year is to get a high early in the year. You sometimes even hold up to as late as Memorial Day. But frequently you turn down by the time March is over, and then the marketplace tends to just bleed us out. We can sometimes... I've seen corn and beans both decline for 9 months with barely a rally over a week and a half in length.
Hey, Glenn, I've got kind of an oddball question for you, but I'm wondering if you have any fear over the long term, and I know you look at really long-term cycles, that there will be a change in which currency leads the world economy?
I think we've already passed that. I had that fear a few years ago. There was uncertainty. Now, I think that's already been answered to me. So no, I don't have that fear right now.
Well, that would be good news then for the U.S. economy.
It'd be good news for us eventually, but probably, to put it maybe a little too simple, but for my children and grandchildren. But we've got to heal this economy, and we are way over-levered in terms of the cycle of man. We have to undo 50 years of leverage, and we don't do that overnight.
Have you thought about the wheat market very much?
Very much so. That acts even sicker than the others. We've been pausing for the last 5 weeks when we could have bounced. This action occurred with trading ranges. If we close below the winter lows now, I see wheat heading for the low threes.
Wow.
I'd rather know it than not know it is the only reason. I've been going around the country this winter, you know, doing meetings and stuff like that, and I said, I really hate to have to bring these messages. These meetings aren't fun, but I got to tell them what, you know, call it as I see it.
Yeah, for all, so you're talking hard and soft both. Is this for all classes?
Yes. I think one of the most telling things, and if I'm, if I'm not correct, I'm close, is the Minneapolis wheat, which a year ago, in 2008 rather, was at $25. That class of wheat is in shorter supply today, and that market just can't get off its rear. And it's down over 75% of what it went up. We are in a deflationary world, in a deflationary economy, and when I had a lot more time, I can explain it, but the bottom line is the deficit spending by the federal government is not going to offset the contraction at the consumer level, nor by the states.
Hold it. Where's crude going if we're in this deflationary
world? 12-year cycle low due this fall in crude oil. In terms of price, I don't know if we'll take out the lows we've already made in crude oil, but I have us languishing overall into the middle part of the decade, into 2016-17. We'll have recoveries into probably into 2012-13, and then back down into mid-decade.
So, Glenn, I'm assuming that given your you know, somewhat bearish stance, you know, that you probably would be looking at making multi-year sales.
We are sold. My producers, again, they do it on their own, but our policy has been sold 3 years right now, and that is all of 2009, 2010, and 2011, corn in particular, because we don't know how much it can recover if we happen to. In other words, when we had a chance to sell 450 2011, we don't know that we can get back there if we go down to 250 first.
Would you say that your producers are concerned at all? And the only, I guess, mm-hmm. the thing that jumps out at me is 18 months ago, whenever guys were locking in inputs and they didn't sell any corn,
mm-hmm.
you know, for the following year, they got hung out to dry for the 2009 year. And I guess I've been recommending strongly to my guys that if you're going to lock one side of the equation in, try to lock in the other. Is there anything you can do from the input side to maybe protect your guys?
We've got 1 minute.
I'll book a lot of anhydrous if June natural gas closes above 6, but that market's falling apart. Things like that. The answer to that is we are not locking in inputs. We were screaming 18 months ago to that if you locked in inputs, you absolutely sell crop. But if you're only going to do one, sell crop. And we maintain that stance until this coming fall, winter, when a 12-year low is due in the energies, and which will probably tie to many inputs as well.
Glenn, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises out of Cedar Falls. Also thanks to Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing from Windsor, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson out of Champaign, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Please do visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. And don't forget to arrive early at our All-Day Ag Outlook meeting next Tuesday, March the 9th, at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. I'm Todd Gleason.